Welcome to the Doubles Only Tennis Podcast, where you learn the best doubles strategies to improve your game and win more matches. I'm your host, Will Bocek. This podcast, my website, and my weekly newsletter all focus on the goal of better understanding the sport of doubles and helping players like you improve faster through actionable advice that you can use in your very next match. My goal is to provide the best doubles strategy resources in the world. And to do that, I study, analyze, and work with players at every level of the game, all the way up to the ATP and WTA tours. If you enjoy this podcast, I've created double strategy products that go even deeper if you want to take your doubles knowledge to the next level. At the end of this episode, I'll explain more about them, or if you want to learn more now, go to thetennistribe.com/products. Here's today's episode. You're about to hear a conversation from the Charleston Open with a guest that really needs no introduction. She has 22 career Grand Slam doubles titles, 111 doubles titles in total, which is just a totally insane number. I can't imagine even playing in 111 tennis tournaments, much less winning 111 titles. She's a former number three singles player in the world. She is currently a TV commentator for ESPN for Tennis Channel. She is a coach for a top 30 WTA singles player and does just so much in the tennis community, is one of the biggest names in our sport, and it is Pam Shriver. Pam was very generous with her time at the Charleston Open. She spent about 30 minutes with us chatting in between matches where she was commentating for the Tennis Channel. And we ask her about Charleston, what makes it such a popular tournament. How does she manage her schedule? She wears a lot of different hats, as I said, being a commentator, a coach. She's even a parent of a couple of kids as well. So we ask her how she manages her time. And then we talk about the current state of doubles. She has some really kind of interesting and what might be a little bit controversial thoughts on the current level of ATP doubles. And we ask her about the Czechs, what makes them so dominant. And then, of course, what we can do to make doubles more popular. She has some pretty unique thoughts, and she's probably, if not the most qualified, certainly one of the top five most qualified people in the world to answer that question of how to make doubles more popular. And then we also talked to her about her experience coaching Vekic. She's helped her rise from just outside the top 100 to nearly a career high of now number 23 in the world. And then at the end, we ask her a few rapid-fire questions, who her ideal doubles partner would be, some thoughts on Twitter spaces, a question about Martina Navratilova, and a tip for net play strategy in doubles. So without further delay, enjoy this conversation with the infamous Pam Shriver. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today, we have Pam Shriver on, a 22-time major champion, 111 doubles titles, and I'm not going to go through everything else, but Pam, welcome.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So this is, I believe it's going to be podcast episode number 107. Do you remember your 107th doubles title?
I do not. Have you done enough homework so that you know?
No, that would have probably taken way too long.
But I can tell you that when Martina and I had our 109 match win streak, that my 107th, our 107th in a row would have been the quarterfinals at Wimbledon in 1985.
Who is that against?
I don't know.
Okay. That's all we've
You're
got.
You're challenging me.
Okay, so I wanted to start. We're here in Charleston. I spoke with Bob Moran a few weeks ago. He was on the show. The players, the fans, the media, everybody loves this tournament. Just your quick thoughts on what makes Charleston so great.
Well, I started playing it when it was at Sea Pines, and the players loved it when it was in both sites in South Carolina. So I think the Southern hospitality in both sites has been outstanding. I do think At first, I remember over 20 years ago when I heard it was moving from Hilton Head and Sea Pines, I was like, no. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to Charleston for the first time, I was like, oh, I get it. I get it. Charleston's an amazing small city. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite places to visit. Great food has something to do with it, but it's also, I think, a mixture of history of our country, the beautiful waterways. One of the most special trips I ever took was I rented a boat with a crew, and I had my mom, my dad, my then husband, and I was pregnant with my firstborn, and we went up the inland waterway from Amelia Island to Daniel Island. Mm-hmm. We took our time, took like 4 nights, because I was broadcasting just the long weekends, so I had a few days in between. So anyway, just have a lot of really great memories, and whenever I'm asked to work Charleston, I try to clear the calendar and get here.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great tournament. It's been this is my first year here, but it's been an awesome experience so far.
Pam, you obviously have a lot of different roles in tennis. So what is this week here without, you know, Donna's not in the field? What does a day in the life kind of look like for you this week without having a player to coach?
Yeah, well, when I work for Tennis Channel, they have the shift system. So for most of the week, there were three shifts. So three play-by-play, three analysts. Of course, Steve Weissman hosts the desk. So it was such great skill. So you know when you're going to work. And so you have actually a fair bit of free time. So I've been working more of the later shifts. And because I came from LA, that was fine for my time clock. So I've been shifting my one terrific meal a day instead of going out for dinner in Charleston. Mm-hmm. I found a lady, Kat, who runs the tourism bureau, gave me a list of about 6 or 7 really good lunch spots. But I go to the gym first. I find a really good coffee before the gym. Sorry, so I'm going all over
good
the
way place. To
I'm
start the day. Organized. Yeah, no, let's hear it.
So number one, I wake up and then I really have to head to a good cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I check my WhatsApp. Usually Nick and Donna are, they're practicing in Croatia. Donna's going to have Easter with her family. So a lot of times early communications are with Europe. We had a video call the other day, the three of us. And, so that's part of my day, is to make sure I stay connected and if I can help in any way. And then, of course, I've got my kids. The teenagers are on spring break, so they don't wake up until mid-afternoon Charleston time. So I did have an interesting family thing happen this week where one of my kids suddenly developed pain in their wisdom tooth. And I got him I got him to see a specialist, and he decided to get them all 4 taken out the next day. So mother's guilt. I've been having some mother's guilt because I was here in Charleston having
a
lovely week while my son had 4 wisdom teeth taken out. But thankfully, he didn't have my experience from 40 years ago. He's actually had a pretty good experience.
Okay. Well, good. Maybe you can repay him somehow after the tournament. Which players thus far have stood out to you as maybe a potential favorite or a dark horse to win the singles title?
Well, I'm looking forward. I'm going to see Alexandrova play later. It's going to be the first time I've seen her play this week. I think I'm interested in a lot of by the quarterfinals. To me, everybody here has a chance to win it still. I mean, obviously, one or two have already finished. I guess if I had to predict a winner, I feel like Bedosa might be playing pretty well. Hmm. Bencic, I think, has something pretty special going here as well. So I'd probably give those two an edge. And of course, Pegula. So one of those three, I think, will be the winner. I can't believe how much Pegula's playing. She's sort of old school tennis right now. She's playing a lot more than the modern day player. And she's playing both singles and doubles, although I think it's smart she took doubles off this week.
Yeah. So speaking of doubles, do you, on a week like this, do you even have a chance to watch a lot of the doubles or...
I have not watched a lot of doubles this week. Okay. The other thing that's going on this week that my other sport that I love, especially since I retired from the tour, is golf. Mm-hmm. So because it's Masters week as we speak, I've spent a lot of time Watching the Masters, even watching the practice rounds. I like to watch the par three contest.
Do you have that on in the booth?
Like, no.
On your phone?
I don't do that.
They won't let you do that.
I will look at the leaderboard.
Yeah. I've been checking it too.
Yes. Yeah. And I have two teams entered in my club, my golf club's fantasy pool or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
I have my names of my teams are first serve and second serve.
Nice.
Right now, my second serve is doing better than my first serve.
That's good. You're as good as your second serve, right?
That's right.
So I want to talk a little bit about the current state of doubles. How would you assess it overall? I want to get into like Opelka's comments a little bit. Why isn't doubles more popular than it is, and why is it kind of where it is right now?
Yeah. Well, I think we can go back to when open tennis started in 1968 and look at how prize money was originally divided. Mm-hmm. Follow the money. And because a lot less prize money went into doubles, the focus started to be more and more on singles. Mm-hmm. When you go prior to open tennis, almost everybody played both. Mm-hmm. Bobby Riggs won the Triple Crown at Wimbledon, you know, singles, doubles, mixed.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's been done. Martina did it. I think Sanchez Vicario did it. But I just think, you know, then one thing happened, like the prize money is better for singles. So more of the players started to want to try and win singles because it was financially more rewarding. Mm-hmm. So then they wouldn't play the doubles. Effect. They couldn't play both. You know, and slowly the game got more physical, more depth. So it started to get harder. But I'll tell you, doubles still has, I think, a great niche. I think it's stronger in the women's game now because more of the top players do play. I think 3 out of 5 on the men's game at the majors, I think it's almost impossible to play both.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that women are 2 out of 3 helps doubles. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Bagula and Goff, what Krejcikova and Siniakova have done, and Krejcikova, you know, all three of those players, Goff, Bagula, Krejcikova, are all contending to win majors and singles as well. Mm-hmm. So I think it makes it all that more interesting.
Yeah. So what do you think needs to happen to, let's say, like 5-10 years down the road, maybe even longer, like 15-20 years down the road, doubles is more popular, let's say as popular as singles? If I were to walk around the grounds here, for example, and I ask a random fan, who is Desiree Kravchuk? Like, they probably may not know who she is. Mm-hmm. If I ask who's Danielle Collins, they're going to know exactly who she is. What needs to happen for that to change?
Well, more money needs to go into doubles. Mm-hmm. It needs to be on TV more. It needs more exposure.
How does that happen?
Well, you need the stars to play. Mm-hmm. So it's complicated, right? Because if the money's not there and if it's going to hurt their singles, why would they play?
Right.
So you keep kind of going around in circles and circles. Mm-hmm. You could have weeks. You could have doubles only weeks, maybe. And it still has these interesting tournaments like Indian Wells where, you know, people are making a transition maybe to the Sunshine Doubles or Sunshine Double. So they want to play extra matches. Mm-hmm. Top seeds, the 32 seeds have byes. They maybe want to try and sneak in a doubles match before they play their singles match in a round of 64 when they're going to play somebody who's already won a match. Mm-hmm. So you do have these moments, obviously, in the team competitions, Davis Cup, Billie Jean King Cup, United Cup, Hopman Cup's coming back, where doubles is certainly is highlighted. Mm-hmm. I think it would take probably a group of pretty smart people to sit down and almost do like a working group.
Yeah.
Kind of similarly, how the age eligibility rule, like how do we bring doubles back? Mm-hmm. You obviously need stars. And I thought the Bryan brothers did such a tremendous job for 20 years, headlining men's doubles and promoting it. I think doubles players could think about how can they bring access more to the fans? How can they be maybe mic'd up? Maybe there's an app. You could do a doubles app. And if you are sitting there with your ear pods, you can actually hear them on the change of ends, what they're saying, their strategies. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like think how to use technology in ways that singles players have just put their hand up and said no. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm on a group chat with a big group chat of ESPN because tennis people, because they've been watching the golf. And how golfers now are starting to talk to broadcasters mid-round.
Yeah, it's been really cool.
It's been fantastic. Yeah. And, you know, I teed up the Coco Vandeweghe. I know I'm going on and on, and I apologize. I'm talking a lot.
Continue.
But like when I we were asked at going into the U.S. Open about 6-7 years ago, USTA okayed if we could tee up a mid-match interview after the first set, if you could get a player willing to do it.
And I remember that.
Yeah, and so we were all told as broadcasters, if you have a relationship or if you find a player who's willing to do it. So I saw Coco Vandeweghe practicing the day before she was going to play Sloane Stephens. I knew it was going to be a high-profile match. She said, you know what? I would do that, especially if she won the first set. So don't you know she won the first set 6-4? Mm-hmm. And I had told Coco, look, you can always wave me off. If I walk out there, it's just going to be two quick questions. It's going to take up. So her adrenaline was going. I sat down beside her. She didn't wave me off. And I asked her two questions. And it was great. You could hear the energy in her voice, and you could just get inside the ropes of what a player is feeling like in the middle of a match. Mm-hmm. And then the whole sport came down on this like a ton of bricks, because all the ducks weren't in a row. We didn't have the ATPs okay. We didn't have the WTA tours okay. It was a bit of a surprise situation, and you know, the establishment of tennis crushed it.
That's disappointing.
It's very disappointing.
Yeah.
Because now other sports are zooming ahead. Yep. So anyway, maybe doubles can figure out, doubles players can take some initiative.
You gonna follow up?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned the Bryan brothers and the impact that they had on the doubles game. They retired a couple years ago, you know, around the pandemic. And since then, I don't think that we've really had a team that has been, you know, the face of doubles yet. But are there any teams or players right now playing that you could see
in the men's game,
in the men's or women's, that you could see becoming the next, you know, face of doubles?
Well, I think Pegula and Gauff, because of their high profile and how much they've played doubles the last year and a half, mm-hmm. I think that's really helped profile women's doubles. I think men's doubles right now is struggling, and I don't think it helps that I was listening when I was in Melbourne. I listened to a couple of the former Aussie greats. I'm not going to name names because it wasn't really on the record. But I overheard, this is somebody who yesteryear won major doubles after major doubles after major doubles. And he was basically saying he couldn't believe the poor quality of men's doubles. And that, you know, because the top singles, most of the top singles players don't play. But that's why at the Australian Open, you know, Kyrgios and Kakanakis, and this year it was Kubler and Hitchikata. They won it and they play singles. So I haven't watched that much men's doubles to kind of look at the quality, but from a former champion standpoint who won both singles and doubles majors of yesteryear, he was trashing it.
Interesting. I've not heard that before. So it sounds like maybe a group of people with a lot of money behind them needs to come in and just change some things up and like take the tour, maybe branch off and do their own thing, like a LIV Gauff thing maybe, or maybe integrate with ATP and WTA and try to say, hey, let us run this.
You actually bring up an interesting point, because can doubles really be featured if it's playing alongside singles at the same tournament?
Yeah.
I don't know if it can.
But it seems like a lot of the organizations that matter are going to have to care about doubles at some point for doubles to succeed, and right now they don't, and I don't know what changes that.
The whole priority of the sport, think how much publicity goes into how many singles majors has somebody won versus, like, I don't even know, like, I couldn't even tell you how many major doubles titles Jamie Murray's won, singles and men's doubles. I wouldn't know that. I couldn't even tell you Siniakova and Krejcikova 100%. But if you ask me, like, oh, Osaka has 4, Kvitova has 2, Halep has 2, Serena retired at 23, Roger retired at 20, I can go through the whole list.
Yeah.
So, but I think that, you know, having a doubles league or a doubles entity that could figure out markets, that would put on would love to have a doubles tournament, and then really tie in kids and interaction. You have to make it different, though. You can't just
yeah, for sure.
That's what I was saying about, like, you got to let people listen to the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not the opponent. You don't want the opponent,
Not
but
like
let
scouting.
People watching know. I think that would be really fascinating, because actually, the strategies, the formations, the court's bigger. There's just more that can go on a doubles court than a singles court.
Yeah, they can make it a lot more, like, fun to watch. Because I think I read this article about F1. Obviously, it's gotten popular with Netflix. But I think even before then, they were growing at a really high rate because in, I don't know if it was the 2000s or maybe early 2010s, they made all these changes to give the fans a better experience.
Well, they have a camera in the car.
And yeah, they
driving.
Added that. They added the drag reduction system, so passing is a little bit easier. They mic
more exciting.
Yeah, they mic up all the drivers, so you can hear them in the car while they're racing.
What about pit crew? That would be fascinating too.
Yeah, they do some of that too. They do interviews with the like team managers. And that was before Netflix, and then Netflix just added fuel to the fire. And I feel like doubles maybe could, I don't know,
for sure
learn from that.
They
like
have to be innovative.
Yeah,
have to be fan friendly.
Yeah,
sponsor friendly. Even go above and beyond where singles players. And then actually, I think it'd be good because then I think doubles would get stronger, and then I think singles would end up saying, "Oh, you know what? We can.
They're
do,
right.
We yeah. can do a few of these.
We
things
should do
too.
That. Yeah, that's a good point." So let's go back to the court. You mentioned the Czechs. What is your view on the Czechs? What makes them so dominant? And do you see anybody challenging them in the next year or two at a Grand Slam?
Well, I think what makes them great is, one, they like each other. They get along well.
Yeah.
They mesh on
They've
and off the
together
court.
Since they were like 12
they
or
know,
something.
They know yeah. each other. It's like the Bryan twins. No one will ever beat being identical twins and yeah. knowing what the other person's yeah. doing. But when you've known each other since the juniors and you've played at every level of the game, it's pretty close. Mm-hmm. And so, and I do think Krejčíková, what I've seen from her, she's sort of very high level steady. Mm-hmm. She has very few dips. Siniaková is the one that can kind of come and go sometimes.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Can somebody, yeah, I think Pegula in golf could beat them. Doubles, you just never know in doubles because most of the time, I know in majors they play out the third, but
yeah,
you know, a lot of times with match tie breaks, yeah. anything can happen.
Right. Hinlan, here you go.
I wanted to ask, so I'm a big fan of the tennis podcast, and I've heard you talk about your relationship with Donna and just how you've helped, you know, her grow and her build her career back this year. This time last year, she was ranked, I believe, just outside the top 100, and now she is at 23, about to beat her career high, if she keeps climbing, of 19. So what do you think you've brought to the table just with Donna as a mentor and coach and everything that you're kind of helping her with?
Yeah. Well, I think I brought an experienced voice of clarity to help kind of clear some of the noise and some of the confusion on how she should play best, and I've just really... I've really been very positive about her strengths on the court, and she needs to lean into her strengths and use them more and learn how to use her power game to intimidate opponents. And she's really done, it's been amazing. I'd never coached before at the elite level. I'd done some coaching on my backyard court occasionally in middle school tennis and coached my kids a little bit. But it wasn't on my agenda. It wasn't planned. But she was open to my input when I drove from LA to San Diego in October. And now the hard part starts because I knew with her talent, she'd been to 19 in the world before.
Right.
She had no business. When I saw her in October, she was in the mid 70s. But now the hard part comes. Now you have to really fight and scrape and for each and every
the
spot.
Margins are just like
yes.
that now.
Yes. Yeah. And you have to stay healthy. And she's, you know, gone through 6 months where she's played more in 6 months than she had in a while, more matches.
Mm-hmm.
And she's trying to figure out how to manage it and get ready and make the next push.
So what does the clay and grass season look like for you guys and for your schedule, you know, balancing coaching Donna and your broadcasting commitments and other, you know, roles in tennis?
Well, the main thing that's keeping me from traveling more is my kids. I'm a single mom of three teenagers that all still live at home. They're 18, 17, and 17. I have two juniors in high school, both with aspirations to go to college. So I've actually struggled a little bit this year with added weeks on the tour. Like I went down to Melbourne a little bit early, but I brought my oldest son with me. The kids are dual citizens with Australia, so it was really great to be able to introduce my oldest at 18 and a half to his other home country. Helped Donna for a few days before it started, worked for ESPN. And then I also took the Monterey week and I left my kids and went down to Monterey. Donna had
good luck charm there.
Yeah, that ended up working out great. Donna did an amazing job of playing her way into that tournament. and beating Caroline Garcia in the finals. And like, I think my role was just to, from my experience and my perspective, I'd seen so many players having not practiced that much or played that much, because she flew to LA right in the middle of an atmospheric river series and we could hardly get on the court. There's no indoor courts in LA.
Yeah.
So she went really underdone, but we both knew that she could play her way in, and she did.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it looks like she had a great weekend.
So looking forward, I'm gonna get to the French Opens next time I see her in person. But now with live stream, you can watch so many of the matches, and you know, I can give input and I can remind her to focus on the things that's helped her get back towards the top 20.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So it looks like it's 1-1 still in the second set. So I think we have a little bit more time.
Okay.
So I want to talk a little bit about just a couple kind of rapid fire questions here at the end. So if I asked Martina your biggest strength as a doubles player, what would she say?
My humor.
Your humor. Why?
keeping it fun. That's what one of the strengths. Okay. I think the other thing, if you talk about X's and O's, it would probably be my serve and first volley.
Okay. So do you think your humor like balanced out her seriousness? Or?
A little bit. But I think we ended up playing almost 10 years together, and it's got to be fun. And there's a lot of times where, you know, your last match on, when you're Shriver, Navratilova, and Navratilova is the first match of the evening session, and then there's a 20-minute delay, and then you go back out, you play two matches.
Yeah.
There's a lot of it that's, you know, not that easy. And Martina would have a big singles match the next day, you know, a semi or a final.
Sure.
So if you didn't enjoy, we had to enjoy each other's company. Mm-hmm. So I think that was one of our strengths.
Okay.
If you were playing in today's game, who would be your ideal doubles partner? And why? And you can name a few players if a few come to
I'll
mind.
I'll go with Coco Gauff because of her her reach up at the net, her overhead, her movement. I'm not the fastest. I have fast hands, slow feet. Ball gets over my head. Coco's got it.
Coco's got it, yep.
and I think actually I could help her. I think I could help her simplify some things when she needed some simplification.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, is that a Twitter question?
Oh, yeah. All right, so our last rapid fire question. We're both big on Twitter. Have really enjoyed a lot of your Twitter spaces. How do you feel like, you know, just knowing the platform that you have, I guess, how have you enjoyed connecting with fans on Twitter spaces, and what benefits do you see like as a broadcaster in your position to use that outlet?
Yeah. Well, Courtney Wynn of WTA Insider, she was the one that introduced me to it and showed me how to use it the first time. I think it was after the Australian Open 15, 16 months ago. I really enjoyed it because it's sort of like a format, like a talk radio segment. And I have enjoyed it. I am taking a break from Twitter. It's almost been 2 weeks. Tonight I sent out a tweet that I regretted. And
what was it?
I'm not saying. But I have to be a little more thoughtful and careful. I've actually taken Twitter off my phone. I have it still on my computer and on my iPad. But I find when I have my phone, I can be a little too impulsive sometimes. And I like to be an agitator sometimes and stir the pot. And there's sometimes where it doesn't help me that much.
Yeah.
So I'm using it this week for more informational purposes, but I have enjoyed the spaces because I think it connects a community. And I think coming out of COVID, we're all still catching up on our connectivity.
Yeah.
So I'll do some more. And I also find now that I have a bit of a coaching hat on, I just, you know, I want to represent Donna and I want to represent the people I work for, ESPN, Tennis Channel. And so sometimes I wear a few too many hats and I'm not just Pam the individual. So I have to be a little careful.
I hear you.
I certainly don't want to embarrass my teenagers.
It's the last thing you want to do. Okay, last question for you. So a lot of people listening are kind of club level doubles players. I'm working on a new ebook on net play strategy. Give us one tip for club level players, how they can improve at the net.
Do not look backwards. When the ball passes you and goes back to your partner, who's maybe you're up at net and your partner's at the back, do not look backwards. Keep your eyes looking forward at your opponents because they will be the first ones that will cue you where the ball is going. And a lot of times if you look back and then maybe your partner fires it to the next net person, it happens too quickly and you're still in the middle of turning your head back. So I would say keeping your eyes forward and really keying off your opponents.
It sounds like you've taught that lesson before.
Not really. I will now.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Pam. I appreciate you coming on. And to everyone listening, we'll link to everything in the show notes and talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Doubles Only podcast. If you're interested in diving deeper into any topics I discuss, I've created double strategy products that allow me to bring you more podcasts and other doubles content without relying on paid ads. I have ebooks and courses that help you make better strategic decisions during matches and become the smartest player on the court. Go to thetennistribe.com/products to learn more. You can also join my free weekly double strategy newsletter that includes video lessons and more on our homepage. If you want to connect, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or email me directly, will@thetennistribe.com.